your body and steal your soul. What became of all the years? Are you drowning in your tears? Who will catch you when you fall? Who will hear you when you call? I will comfort you. Image of those who have walked before me here. I am cast in the web of an ancient spell. I'm holding on to life. I'm drifting in a stream. Everything's much clearer now. We live within a dream and never wait.
Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, August 14, 2023. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of a website of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. You can also support us by purchasing the books, Government by Consent and Court Access in the Common Law, also found on the right-hand side of a website. Also, please support NLAs by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab, top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is going to be in Hebrews. It's going to be chapter 10, and it's read by Alexander Scorby. Hebrews chapter 10.
Chapter 10. For, having a shadow of good things to come, and not the very image of the things, can never with those sacrifices which they offered year after year continually make the comers thereunto perfect. For then would they not have ceased to be offered? Because that the worshippers once purged should have had no more conscience of sins. But in those sacrifices there is a remembrance again made of sins every year. For it is not possible that the blood of bulls and of goats should take away sins. Wherefore, when he cometh into the world, he saith, Sacrifice and offering thou wouldest not, but a body hast thou prepared me. In burnt offerings and sacrifices for sin thou hast had no pleasure. Then said I, Lo, I come. In the volume of the book it is written of me, To do thy will, O God. Above, when he said, Sacrifice and offering and burnt offerings and offering for sin thou wouldest not, neither hadst pleasure therein, which are offered by the law. Then said he, Lo, I come to do thy will, O God. He taketh away the first, that he may establish the second. By the which will, we are sanctified through the offering of the body of Jesus Christ once for all. And every priest standeth daily ministering and offering oftentimes the same sacrifices, which can never take away sins. But this man, after he had offered one sacrifice for sins forever, sat down on the right hand of God, from henceforth expecting till his enemies be made his footstool. For by one offering he hath perfected forever them that are sanctified. Whereof the Holy Ghost also is a witness to us. For after that he had said before, This is the covenant that I will make with them after those days, saith the Lord. I will put my laws into their hearts, and in their minds will I write them, and their sins and iniquities will I remember no more. Now, where remission of these is, there is no more offering for sin. Having therefore, brethren, boldness to enter into the holiest by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way, which he hath consecrated for us through the veil, that is to say, his flesh, and having an high priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a true heart in full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering, for he is faithful that promised. And let us consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as ye see the day approaching. For if we sin willfully, after that we have received the knowledge of the truth, there remaineth no more sacrifice for sins, but a certain fearful looking for of judgment and fiery indignation, which shall devour the adversaries. He that despised Moses' law died without mercy under two or three witnesses. Of how much sorer punishment, suppose ye, shall he be thought worthy, who hath trodden under foot the Son of God, and hath counted the blood of the covenant wherewith he was sanctified an unholy thing, and hath done despite unto the Spirit of grace? For we know him that hath said, Vengeance belongeth unto me, I will recompense, saith the Lord. And again, The Lord shall judge his people. It is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. But call to remembrance the former days, in which, after ye were illuminated, ye endured a great fight of afflictions, partly whilst ye were made a gazing stock both by reproaches and afflictions, and partly whilst ye became companions of them that were so used. For ye had compassion of me in my bonds, and took joyfully the spoiling of your goods, knowing in yourselves that ye have in heaven a better and an enduring substance. Cast not away therefore your confidence, which hath great recompense of reward. For ye have need of patience, that after ye have done the will of God, ye might receive the promise. For yet a little while, and he that shall come, and will not tarry. Now the just shall live by faith. But if any man draw back, my soul shall have no pleasure in him. But we are not of them who draw back unto perdition, but of them that believe to the saving of the soul.
Hey, Jan, do we have any questions or announcements this evening?
Yes, John, we have several. The first one is, I am curious to know how the National Liberty Alliance feels about the courses taught on the Federalist Papers, the Constitution, the Supreme Court, and so forth. I have taken many of their courses and feel they are excellent courses. My question is this, do their courses support the U.S. corporation more than the original foundation of America by our forefathers?
Well, of course, the answer to the last part of that is of course not. As far as taking a course, I'm not aware of any courses that are out there in the Federalist Papers, so I have never taken that. I prefer research, and you know, I've discovered research and different things many years ago, and anything I approach, I really take it as a research process. I haven't taken many courses at all, really, although I have a few here or there. So I don't know how to answer anything other than that. I'm not familiar with it. But the Federalist Papers are an extremely important, they're really important to really read. They're a little bit kind of, well, I don't know, I guess you don't even really need to know much about the Constitution. Just get out a copy of the Constitution, and as they talk about each part, you can look at the different parts that they're talking about, because they cover the whole thing. And the Anti-Federalist Papers really put the icing on the cake, so to speak. It really finishes off and discovers a lot of the problems and corrects them and adds a Bill of Rights, very powerful. And so both papers are extremely important to really, you know, understand, to comprehend if you're going to get deep down into the common law and into who we are as a people, how this nation was put together and how this document came to be. So. All right, next question.
I was watching Mike Lindell on the Brendan House show this morning, and a lady called with a very good question. She wanted to know if we the people could join Trump's case in D.C. as co-defendants as a way to fight back against the lawfare that the criminal left is using to go against their political opponents.
So what's the question in there?
Wants to know if they can, if we could join Trump's case in D.C. as co-defendants.
You know, I wouldn't even think of anything like doing that. I don't want to interrupt the work that he's doing. He's got a well-planned, well-laid-out plan, obviously. I know a lot of people are going into the courts with the, you know, all of the corruption and the votings and all that stuff, and I don't want to tell people not to do anything. I mean, if people feel strong to do about that, that's fine. They also should learn about how to have government by consent and get involved in their own communities to take back the government. And it does help to bring more attention and bring information out. But again, I think it's more important to focus in on learning how to have government by consent, starting to build a coalition of people within the counties to develop the committees of safety, take back our judicial process and political process at the grassroots level, and just get involved, take back this nation, this country. And I think that's the where we really should be spending our time. Now is a time for educating. It's been a time for educating for quite some time. We have to get educated, because when we get to the other side of things, you know, we have to be able to take back what Trump is delivering to us, you know, through, you know, of course, taking it back with the military to deliver it back to the people. And it's unfortunate that many people, even at the top level, don't even understand that we're a republic and not a democracy. You know, my stomach always turns every time I hear someone on the tube anywhere, you know, YouTube or whatever you're listening to, even X22. I mean, all of them. They talk about us being a democracy. And that tells me that they haven't really been taught the fundamentals of who we are as a people. They haven't, you know, checked it out themselves, and they haven't been taught that in school. And that's the problem. I know I wasn't, and I was in school in the 50s and the 60s. And, you know, even back then, it still was not being taught in school. I never knew we were a republic when I was young. I had to discover that on my own. So, anyway. I guess that's about all I have to say there.
Okay, I live in the state of Ohio. Our Committee of Safety has tried to obtain one of our school board members' bond and oaths. The school treasurer responded that the board was not required to be bonded. He further stated that the oath was an optional thing. However, he had some oaths which he did send us. There is no date on it, that it was, when it was signed, no term, and no signature of who administered the oath. Our COS feels these oaths are worthless. What are your thoughts and advice?
Well, it sounds like they are. The problem is I don't know if you've been following the process that we put together. That's the key point. You know, you have to be there with your sheriff. Yeah, you have to work on papers, and put them together and deliver them on to the sheriff to get him on your side. That's of course the charter and resolutions, and you have to get educated. We do have a process on how to approach the school board. We speak about it often. Just to briefly make the point, I mean, you have to meet with the people in the community. First of all, you've got to organize your committee of safety. That takes about 3 months. If you're really pushing hard on it and moving it, you can get it done to the point of approaching the sheriff within 3 months. You have to educate your sheriff. You have to get everyone involved getting educated. You have to learn the process on how to go about to go before the board. Like I said, you want to get a call, a special meeting for, and invite the people of the neighborhood of that school district, get them together, talk to them. You grow more there, and you come in with a large group of people. You should be able to fill that hall up, I mean, to overflowing. And the sheriff or one of his deputies should be there for serving the papers for the ban for oath and bond. Doesn't matter that they don't understand that and they think they don't need that or they don't have that. The board in itself doesn't have a bond, but the individuals have a bond. They have to have a bond in order to have hold an elected position. And if they don't have a bond, then they're not in office. Same thing with the oath. If they don't have an oath that is recorded and dated, with a signature, because there has to be a judge there or someone to give that oath. And if that's not taken, then they don't have an office. And those seats then are vacant, and someone can seize those seats. To force the process of the bond, there is a code that requires them to obey. And again, if you're just going to the board and just trying to do this without going through really getting support, getting the people behind you, making a plan, discovering how you're going to lay out that plan when you go before the board, having the sheriff there with the papers, and then what to do next if they don't respond within 10 days, because they have 10 days to produce that information or give up their office. And that's not going to be an easy task to push it through, but you can get the courts to enforce it, because there is a code. You're requiring a code to be enforced. Judges, I think the judges in the federal levels are far, far, far more evil and corrupt than the ones in the state level. But, you can get things done more, I think, enforcement on a state level than you can on a federal level. So, and you're on the state level. So, anyway. So that's the process, and it needs to be followed through. If you take shortcuts, you go without an education, you don't understand the Constitution yourself, you don't understand the process of what you're doing to get these oaths and bonds, and you don't realize the importance of getting that sheriff on board with you, getting him educated by giving him a book, and our plan is really early on to have a five-minute meeting with the sheriff. Really just to talk to them about things you're looking to do in the county and giving them a copy of the book and say, we'd like to get together and talk with you. But, of course, you have to go through and get your resolutions first and your charter, so that when he gets to read that, he'll understand what you're doing and he should be able to get on board with you without a problem, because he'll see the legality of it, the constitutionality of it. So... All right.
Last question. Is NLA familiar with the term synergy?
You know, that's very familiar. Didn't that term come up recently somewhere? I'm not sure if I know. Well, what do you have there? Do you know? Does he say, Jan?
Say again, I didn't catch that.
Does it give any information on synergy? I know. No. I've heard that word recently.
No, there's no information.
I'll have to look that up. I know it's ringing a bell, but I don't know what it is, synergy. So.
Well, to me it means you can have two things which have a certain energy by themselves, but you combine them and you get synergy. You get more energy than either one of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it means to me. And that's the last question.
Okay, no announcements or anything, huh?
No.
All right, I guess we'll go right into a Q&A. We only have one person in the queue, so if anybody else wants to get in the queue, now is the time to do that. Take our first person. Let's see. Is that Mike? Is that M-I-K-W? What's your first name and your state?
Hi, it's Mike, and the state is California.
All right, Mike from California. Go right ahead.
I spoke with you for a couple of minutes last week. I've got a court case coming up this Friday. I haven't filed any paperwork. I want to challenge jurisdiction. I was undecided whether I should file the paperwork before.
Maybe you can back off your mic a little bit because you're breaking up. And I think you're over-modulating when nothing's happening.
Okay. Is that better?
Let's try it.
Okay. So, yeah, I was undecided as to whether I should file paperwork before I go to court or go to court and ask for a continuance and file the paperwork right after.
Well, what kind of court is it? Is it traffic court?
No, it's criminal court. I was arrested and thrown in jail for carrying a concealed gun.
Okay. And, you know, what you said you were in California. This California has pretty strong gun laws out there, right?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
California probably has some pretty strong gun laws.
Yeah, they do. They pretty much, if you don't have a concealed carry, they don't allow open carry. You just can't carry a gun anywhere unless you have a permit.
Well, you know, in a criminal case, it's a tough case to go in. What are you thinking? Are you thinking of challenging the jurisdiction?
Yeah, I want to challenge jurisdiction.
That's going to be a little tough, you know, because it's a criminal case. I mean, you know, they're just going to brush that away. Is there a jury? Has a jury been selected yet?
No. The only thing I have is they gave me a court hearing when they released me from jail. I haven't been in the court yet, so it'll be my first appearance. It's the arraignment.
Okay, so you haven't even been arraigned yet?
Correct. I have not been arraigned.
And do you have any paperwork on the charges?
What was that?
Do you have any paperwork on the charges?
I did call the clerk, and I got them to send me the paperwork, and it basically says I was carrying a gun illegally.
Okay. Well, you know, what you want to do really is make a challenge in the court. I would do it by paper so that it gets good before you get there, the procedure. And post talk about the Second Amendment and dig deep. I'm sure you'll find a lot of stuff on our website here.
Yeah.
Memorandum.
Yeah.
So the other thing is, again, it's kind of difficult because it's really going to play by ear and how they're approaching this. And if you get any paperwork on it, anything further the charges, if they're carrying a weapon, it was concealed, right?
Yes, it was.
Concealed. And how'd you get a weapon? Did you come in from another state?
Oh, no. I live in California. I was on my way out to a job, like about 100 miles from where I live. I stopped to use a bathroom at a McDonald's, and somebody saw it, and they called the sheriffs.
Mm-hmm. All right, so you live in California, and you were traveling, traveling, or you by your home?
Well, I was traveling to a job.
So you were running locally, out of state and went into California, so it was a little different, it's a little kind of a better defense, if you did have a carrying permit from another state at least. But look at the bottom line is the Constitution is clear, and that's where you're going to make an argument there. And Of course, I wouldn't make a plea of guilty. You could challenge the jurisdiction. You're going to upset them if you challenge the jurisdiction, so you have to really figure that out. I wouldn't say that, but you know, that is one way to go. To challenge the jurisdiction and make the point of what kind of court. It's a civil law court. The statute has nothing to do with you. But you really got to be able to defend that. Have you taken the course?
I'm going through the course right now. And I just started last week. So, yeah, I've got an awful lot to learn.
One of the things I would make the position at first to try to I'd get a paper in there and what your position is concerning the right to bear arms. That's number one. Okay. I wouldn't jump too quickly and challenge the jurisdiction until we get a better education. You know, these things could take some time, and you can always push the time, and, you know, some of the things, they make another date for a month from now or whatever, you might want to say, yes, you know, I need to get some sample, I need some time to put something together, you can get more time. But you can always find ways to get time, you know, through the process.
Yeah.
Quite a bit. Now, you're going to be going in a state court or a county court? Well, I would imagine you're in a state court, huh?
What's that? I'm having a little bit of trouble here.
Are you in a county court or a village court or a state court?
Oh, it's a state court. It's California Superior Court.
Okay. Right. So, yeah, they have the jurisdiction. But again, it's going to be a battle to challenge the jurisdiction. You've got to lay out the jurisdiction. But maybe by you get through the course, by the time you get through it, maybe you'll be able to take that out and do a challenge of the jurisdiction also.
Gotcha. Now, as far as what I do this Friday, should I ask for more time? You know, just tell them I want to seek counsel, or
you should wait to see what they do and what they say, because
okay.
It sounds like we're going through the election, you know, the plea, and you know again. See, if I was going into the court, I'd be there by special appearance, and that would be my attitude. But you don't have enough information, enough ability to really, I presume, anyway, be able to hold that position and make a good argument and so on. You're going to frustrate the court, that's for sure.
Yeah, I understand that. So just wait and see. Your advice would be wait and see what they do, and then if they're going to proceed, which I assume they're going to, I'm new to this. I haven't been a criminal very long.
Hey, what's the code? Is it a long code, a short code? Can I read it that you claim that you're violating it? By the way, if anybody wants to get into the queue, the queue is open. But what is the code? Do you know what it says?
Hang on a second. I'm grabbing it. It says, okay, so the charge is the people of the state of California are the plaintiff. Of course, I'm the defendant. And it's got the date. I did the crime of having a concealed firearm on person in violation of PC-25400-AX2, a misdemeanor, was committed.
Wait, say that all over again. PC, P as in Tom, C as in Cat?
The violation is P as in Paul, C as in Cat, 25400, and then in brackets I've got a small letter A and then the number 2 in a set of brackets.
A and 2 together inside a bracket.
Yeah.
In other words, parentheses. Correct? Brackets are more square than parentheses.
Yeah, these are round. Yeah, I guess some
more. Okay, have you looked it up to read it?
I have not looked it up. I've been studying your course and going through the book. But I haven't actually looked up the code. I just assumed that it was what they said it was, carrying a concealed weapon.
Well, yeah, but, you know, reading it and getting some information, you might be able to find a defense in there. And it's always good, of course, to know day two. What it says, you know, again, when you go to court, leave nothing open.
Okay.
Nothing unturned. You need to know everything. You know, California code, penal code. Law section, California legislative information, person guilty of carrying a concealed firearm, and the person does any of the following. Carries concealed within any vehicle that is under the person's control or direction, any pistol, revolver, or other firearm capable of being concealed upon the person, carries concealed upon the person, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
Let me open it up again and see what it says in here. Oh, they got a whole bunch of stuff in there, don't they? They really pull it off. Okay, jumping down to six, if both of the following conditions are met by imprisonment pursuant to subdivision, blah, 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 the judge will exceed, not to exceed 1 year. Have you been invited?
No, I haven't. The only thing I have is this court thing that tells me I need to go to court and what I just read.
Well, when you go into court, you ask for, to see a copy of the indictment.
Okay.
And that should be the beginning thing. I mean, there's nothing wrong with asking that. I mean, if you committed a crime, you have the right to, you have to be indicted before you can face a situation that requires jail time.
Okay.
An infamous crime is any crime that it's not the crime that it's infamous that makes it infamous. It's the fact that you have to be incarcerated that makes it infamous. And that's an important note to realize. And you may be able to definitely get more time because they really got to go out and get an indictment. Go to your bed and
How do they get an indictment?
Well, they have to, first of all, they have to go to a grand jury and request an indictment. That's simple. And if they're going to do that, you want to pay close attention to that. Maybe go in and see the grand jury and request it. I'd like to come in and talk to the grand jury. Now you really need to sit down and really put together a good paper that you might want to read to them concerning the Second Amendment, the Constitution, and so on and so forth. But you cannot be held for any kind of a crime, without being indicted. Indictment is required.
Okay. So I just bring up the fact that I haven't been indicted, and
you ask if you've been indicted. You don't know anything. You walk in and say, have I been indicted for this? That may really make them wonder what the next step is for them to see the safety, let's see. Okay, let's quickly look at something. Okay, but anyway, that's the key thing. You have to make sure that you've been indicted. There's no indictment when they really want to do. And that's the main thing. They may say, they're talking misdemeanor, okay? And they may say to you, a misdemeanor doesn't require an indictment. But it says jail time here, and that's the point you want to bring up. And now you're going to be able to do the homework before the day to go into court, because you're going to have to defend that and make the point that the U.S. Supreme Court decision that talks about the fact that what an infamous crime is. Look it up in Black's Law will give you an understanding of an infamous crime and refer you probably to some court cases, the Supreme Court cases that make that point that it's, what makes a crime infamous is Not the crime itself, but the penalty, the punishment. That's what makes it infamous.
Okay.
And they probably have no clue about that, so you have to come in with authorities.
Okay. All right. And another question I have on this, and this is really secondary. They took my property. I haven't gotten it back. Do I wait until after I get this this charge cleared up before I sue to get my property back, or do I...
Okay, when you say your property, I guess you're talking about the system or something, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one. Yeah, it's, you know, I wouldn't even bring that up until later on.
Okay, okay.
And you, but you definitely, you know, want to really do some homework on that. So.
Okay. All right, yeah, well, I'll be studying.
It's in the Fifth Amendment here. It's, no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime. Okay? And remember, that's the key, an infamous crime. Okay? They're using, if you go into the code, it talks about jail sentence up to 1 year. Okay? And remember, they're under the delusion that an indictment is required, you know, that an infamous crime is anything that gets a penalty under 1 year, and therefore you can do the time in the county jail as opposed to going to prison. And so they say, well, if you go to prison and not committing a crime, you don't really need a jury. You know, your Fifth Amendment, you want to build your case, be able to articulate it, and you also want to bring up the Supreme Court ruling talking about the meaning of an infamous, more than infamous crime is. And so let me go back to read this. No person shall be to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless it is a presentment of an indictment of a grand jury.
Okay.
Except in cases arising in the land and able to ask for a blah, blah, has nothing to do. But that's the key right there.
Okay.
That should be your first argument. Now, if that time goes on, depending on things, you know, if you get a jury, you want to make sure that jury is fully informed, and that's going to be an uphill battle. So,
right.
But that's all down the road a little bit. You know, I think this is going to cause a problem in their case to the extent that they're going to have to put things off for a month, and then they decide that they're going to have to go out and get an indictment. And you're going to need to be paying close attention to that to see what's going to go on. You're going to request, I'd like to talk to the grand jury, and then try to make a case before the grand jury. I mean, it's difficult to get into the grand jury.
Uh-huh. Okay. Alrighty. Well, I...
Someone else is in the queue, so if you want to continue talking, you know, that other thing. Anybody else got a question or a comment into the queue? If you're on a phone, star 6 and a 1. If you're on an app or whatever, you can just hit the button. Yeah, Gerard.
John, I have... Oh, I'm sorry.
I thought that was Gerard. Who spoke?
This is Terry.
Oh, okay, Terry.
And all I was going to say was that if he beats the thing and he's found not guilty, his property comes back to him.
Oh, that's right.
Period. No one can give up.
That's right.
So that's all.
It becomes a big dilemma for them in many ways. They're going to fight that tooth and nail. Look at these people don't know the law. They're lawbreakers. You know, I mean, look what they're doing. They don't even know the law. I mean, we look at the law all day long, and you try to get them to obey it, and they won't obey it. And I find they won't even obey their own law. They work around their own law. Even the things that they claim to be the law, when it's time to put it upon them, they work their way right around it. They ignore it. So it's tough in the judicial system. So. Anything else, guys?
No, I think that covers it. I guess I'm just going to continue studying, and I certainly appreciate you answering my questions. I'll let you guys know how it goes.
All right, sounds good.
Okay, thank you.
We don't have anyone in the queue. This is the first time in years we don't have any. Usually we get stuck having people left in the queue when it's time to close down. So anybody else got anything? Get into the queue. I see Gerard's here. You got anything, Gerard? You're muted if you're talking. Yeah. Guess nothing. No.
I'm unmuted.
All right, I got a few people in the queue.
Can you hear me? Hello?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
I can hear you. Okay, let me take the next person. I don't know. We've got a couple people in the queue now. If you want, you can take the mic in 20 minutes or so. And again, anybody else wants to get into the queue, now's the time. Let's take our next person, Walt from New York.
Yes, hello, John. Right now I'm in Florida, New York Forum, but I want to ask you a Second Amendment question.
Mm-hmm.
If you could do a background check, I went in a gun store, a couple gun stores. They said you have to purchase a gun and they'll do a background check. And then if you fail, they'll buy the gun back, but you lose some money. Is there any place you can do a background check without purchasing a gun first?
I'm not aware. Now, what state are you talking about buying a gun? Is this a state where you don't need a permit?
No, it's Florida.
Okay, and Florida does require a permit. Well, why don't you, do you have a permit?
No, it doesn't require a permit. It
oh, you're looking for a rifle check. Or something? What are you looking to buy? A rifle, shotgun?
Well, I went in a store. It didn't matter whether it was a pistol, rifle. They still said you have to do a background check. But then before they allow you to do that, you have to purchase a gun, like a $300 gun or something. And then if you fail the background check, they'll buy it back, but you have to pay a fee for that.
Right. Well, doesn't Florida require a carrying permit or a permit to have a pistol?
I don't think so, no.
Well, you should go down and talk to the sheriff and find out, because if that's the case, you'll get your background there. Then when you go in, what happens is when you have a permit, it's like a pass, okay? But they do play a game. I know here in New York, I had a real hard time getting a permit. And it literally took me a year and a half, where I know someone who went before me, only took them 3 months. But they kind of knew some people. But others have said it takes about 6 months here in New York. But it took me about a year and a half to get a permit. And when I did finally get the permit, even though I had a permit and I went to buy some weapons, and I purchased them, and then there was some kind of a mark in there saying that not to sell it to me or something. So they told me they couldn't sell me the weapons, that they would hold it, and they'd have to have that cleared off. And they said usually what happens is this kind of thing just clears off in about a week. It drops off, and when it drops off, then they can give me the weapons. And it did do that. So they were just giving me a hard time, I think, personally. That's what I think, anyway.
Hey, so you're saying I could ask the sheriff's department to do a background check for me?
Well, you would want to go to the sheriff's department to see if you need a permit to get
Governor passed a law for July this year. You don't need any permit. You just have to do a background check.
Okay. Well, I guess that's the only thing you could do then. Is go get. So you don't have to have a permit in Florida to carry a weapon now?
No.
Concealed? Nope. No, you don't. They changed the law on July 1st.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, I never owned a gun before, but I'm interested now because you know what's going on in society. Okay. And so I went in there, and he says, we'll do a background. And I said, okay, can you do a background check? They said, yes, but you have to purchase a gun first.
Okay, so let's
say
you
fail the background check, we'll buy it back, but we have to charge you a service fee for buying it back. I think that's unfair, so I just want to know if I can just get a background check without buying a gun. So you said just contact the sheriff's department.
Yeah,
there's other places that do background checks. Employers do them. It's not a big deal.
So I
think going and asking the sheriff where he gets his background check. Look, even if you got to pay a little fee, it's probably cheaper than what the store is going to charge you for buying their gun back.
Yeah.
Well, did they tell you what the percentage is?
10%. I think it's a $300 gun, and you fail the background check. I'm not sure, but I think it's 10%. They charge you $30. Buy the gun back.
It's probably not worth going anywhere. Just giving them the $30 if you can think. Why do you think you're going to fail it? Do you have something when you were younger or something?
I don't know. Maybe 40 years ago I had something.
That may show up, but it probably won't. I mean, you ever get a disposition on the case if it's something 40 years ago? You were probably a kid then or a teenager? Or how old were you back then?
Oh, what it was is I had a health problem. I had this headache. I still do. And someone told me to go to, go to the mental health clinic because you have depression. So I went there and took pills for a while, stopped taking them, but I wonder if that's going to be on my record.
Yeah, I doubt that's going to be on your record, but even if it is, let's say that was 40 years ago when I was a kid, give me a break, I'd tell them. And then at that point, you'd have to take it into the court. You know, you'd have to move that into the court. Hey, for the $30, you're there. You don't have to run around. You don't have to come back. And who knows? They may still say, hey, it doesn't matter. Our policy is we've got to do it anyway. So I'd give
right,
$30. That's what I would do.
All right. Thank you, John.
Yeah. Do you want to pipe any more in on that, Gerard?
No. Well, look, they got to be careful going into your medical background. That violates HIPAA and stuff. But.
That's right, yeah.
They may do laws for mental health, but that was before that was in effect. I don't think that'll even turn up.
Yeah,
it was 40 years ago, I don't know. I don't think that they were that good.
Hey, the other thing was it in Florida or was it in New York that situation?
Oh, it was in Rochester.
Okay, so it's even a different state. I doubt you.
I
can't fathom that you're going to have a problem with that.
Well, you know what? I'm just going to call the sheriff and get the test done, and I'll let you know what happens.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, thank you.
All right.
Hello to Gerard.
Okay, and by the way, we only have one other person in the queue. Anybody wants to get into the queue? If you're on a phone, *6 and a 1. Any other thing, any app you have, there should be a button into the queue. Okay, next, let's see. Ross, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hi, John. I'm asking what all the two states that actually have all the community safeties organized.
What about the committees of safety organized? I missed the first part of that.
You said... Two states are fully organized for the community.
Yeah, yes, we have a couple of states. We may even have three that not organized. No, we have some states that every sheriff has a book. Okay, that's what we have, but we don't have any state where we have committees of safety in every county. No, I think we have. Matter of fact, I just recently looked. Let's see. I think we have 161 committees of safety in process. Let's see, yep.
It's basically not finalized yet, but in the process.
Yeah, the 161 is in the process. It doesn't mean that they're operating as committees of safety yet. It means they're in the process. And that's where we're trying to organize to get our district coordinators to make communications with these individuals to kind of follow up with them and see where they're at and keep track on them and assist them and so on and so forth. Anybody that wants to volunteer for that kind of work, send us a mail. Just go to mail@nationallibertyalliance.org and just say, I'd like to maybe help as a district coordinator. And the district coordinators, again, need to be communicating with these committees of safety. We need to make sure that they're operating under the plan, because it's a wrongdoing for people to go out and build a committee of safety to try to take control of their elected individuals if they have no clue what the Constitution says themselves, because they'll start to do some things that are not right because they don't know the law. They don't know what is required. And it's the same thing on the other side, too. It's a wrongdoing for anyone that's an elected official that doesn't know the Constitution to take office,
Mm-hmm.
But no, we don't have any state with all committees of safety.
That means it's not like...
Excuse me?
It's not completed yet. It's in the process of becoming complete.
Oh, well, you're asking, we don't even have a state with all counties in the process of being complete. We don't have that, no.
No, it'll probably be a while before that.
Yeah, we're trying to, I think things will work really well and start to really pump up once we get critical mass. And, You know, I understand we're working on a couple, or at least one really good interview potential, and that's going to give us a lot of exposure. And so we'll see how that turns up. We'll announce it when we know that we have that interview. And with that one interview, I can see, because the people who watch this particular interview, a lot of the people are really involved deep in what's going on today. And a lot of them have podcasts and connected to different things with organizations. So if we can get this interview, I think we're going to be on the borderline of tipping into critical mass. And critical mass will mean a huge number of people coming all at one time. And that at that point, I think, will really help to grow our committees of safety tremendously.
Really, a podcast in Oregon?
I'm sorry, a podcast in Oregon? What about it?
Oh, are you going to advertise in Oregon too, or all across the United States?
Well, no, it's not in a particular state like Oregon. No, it's a potential interview that will be on YouTube and Rumble, and well, I don't think it's on YouTube at all, but Rumble and numerous other platforms that this interview would take place on. And the thing is that the people that listen in to this particular individual, they're all active. They're really active. And that's what we need. We need people that are active. You know, we have, almost 11,000 members, and most people, you know, are lumps on a log. They're not really very active. And that's the way all organizations are. And people, you know, there's a lot of people just waiting to see what happens before they make a move and so on and so forth, you know. But we don't have time to wait. We got to get up and do it.
Also, John Drash, because my sibling said he did the math and he figured out that he making some money off of me.
Who's making money off of you? Me?
Yes.
Well, NLA takes it. Yeah, well, NLA survives off of what I call sort of the widow's mite. You know, we only ask for $5, and when the collapse comes and things are adjusted, that $5 might be 10 cents. And that pays the bills. I mean, we have bills to pay. And that keeps going. So, you know, I personally, I had carried NLA for many years. I paid everything. Every once in a while, we'd ask for money. Like when we were building our site, we asked for money, and we did get a lot of people donated, and we've got enough money to be able to build our site. But maintaining that site and keeping things going, I personally kept it going for quite some time. Right now, even my books, monies go into NLA before it comes to me, pay off anything that's left over. And if anything comes up, if we hit critical mass and we get hit with a big broadband bill, I probably will have to take out of the funds that I've been collecting for my book over and above what the needs are in NLA at the moment. But, you know, if people think don't support what we're doing, then they don't pay it. People support all kinds of work. There's people out there on YouTube, and they put out nice programs and so on and so forth. They're not doing anything that's as important as what we're doing. But they put out nice programs, and people, you know, give them money to keep them going. It's what they're doing for a living. But I'm personally not making a living from this. I do get the overfunding, the monies that are overflow in my books when NLA doesn't need it.
Yeah.
For me.
You're basically saying you make money when you are doing your contract business. That's mm-hmm. the only thing you're
well, that's,
making
yeah,
money from.
Well, I was funding this when I was a contractor.
Yes.
You know, again, the other thing $5 a month isn't much, and there's not that many people giving that much. We do have people who give $100 and $50. A couple of people give $100, maybe a couple of people give $50, some 10, 20, but most people give $5. And that's good. We have to survive some way. And so it is what it is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a plan. I mean, to go professional at some point. We have to go. We're never going to be able to do what we want unless we go professional. And that means we have to start taking in some monies, and we're not going to be able to take the big monies in until we get much more membership. You know, to support a professional program here, we probably need 1 million people because the statistics, and I've looked into this quite in depth, the statistics for, you know, people who will carry a program on this, like this kind of a situation that we're running here, is about 1.5%. So if you get 1 million people that comes in, and I was looking more like 750,000, 750,000 would bring us pretty close to being able to carry professionals. But you'll only get about 1.5% that'll actually support what we're doing here, financially speaking. So.
Okay. Okay.
All right. Anything else?
Nope. That's it.
All right. Thanks, Ross. All right. We're empty out of the nobody in the queue right now. So if anybody wants to get into the queue, again, *6 and 1. And if you're on an app, hit your button to get into that queue. All right. Anybody else up here? Anything? Got anything? Gerard, do you got any subject matter to discuss? And how's your case going, by the way? Well, I guess you're away from your computer. Hey, I don't know what we want to talk about. Maybe someone could raise a topic we can speak about. Getting silence here.
I guess you caught everyone off guard. I don't know.
The first time we ever got to a point where we had nobody in the queue.
Loaded.
Yeah. But, I don't know, we don't have a topic. I don't know what I'm looking to see what we might want. I like to hear what people want to talk about, you know. That's, I don't know what I want to talk about. But, well, I guess we could talk a little bit about the fact that we got to go professional. There's no other way to get around this. And we do need to get out there, and we got to get interviews. So I want to ask people, you know, to really think about seeing how they might contact different places where they hear their news from, podcasters or whatever, and see if you can't make a connection with those individuals to have an interview. You know, for National Liberty Alliance to come on and give the program, you know, what we're doing. Anybody who makes a connection, you can work that out with Jan, and then Jan will make the appointment for me for whatever kind of a interview we can get going. So it's really important that we get the word out. That's the only way we're going to grow. And again, I think we have a really good one coming up. It looks pretty solid. I'm waiting to hear back. And again, it's going to be something that's really going to, I think it's really going to get our message out pretty broad. So, see how it goes. Okay, I see we got Anthony here. Anthony, I think your mic is open. You got the mic? Nope, it's not open. Yeah, I think it is open. Maybe not. No, let me hit the next question button. Okay, now you're open, Anthony. West Virginia?
It's open now, yeah. Hello, John. How you doing?
Good. Yourself?
Doing okay. Doing okay. Been a long day today, but I was just going to be listening. But since you don't have anybody calling in, I thought that we might as well talk, see if we can accomplish something. I'm still working on the committee of safety. I talked to a friend of mine today, and I believe he's going to be the first fellow that's going to be joining me. And so I got a list of all the meetings from my town here in West Virginia, and so we're going to be going to some of the meetings that just happen to be taking place on Wednesday from 1 to 4, and they're different kinds of meetings, but we don't have the education meeting scheduled yet, which I think, like you, that's the most important. But just moving along. Like you say, if we can do this in 3 months, I know we have a good sheriff here in our county, in Mercer County, And I've spoken with him before personally, and I've spoken to a couple of his deputies, and they're savvy. They're savvy about common law. At mm-hmm. least they respond like they are.
Do you know?
So
what,
I think we have a...
What counties?
Mercer County in West Virginia. Mercer.
Do you know if they got the book?
I'm going to get them the book. If I didn't, how long have we had this book? Could I have possibly given them? We had a different sheriff then, so it wouldn't be.
Well,
the same
you know, when I was sending the books out, now I have people send the books out themselves because it's just too much work for me to do. But when I was sending them out, I would put a sticker in the front of the book, making it the property of the sheriff's office. And so if they got it from me, it should be in the sheriff's office. It belongs to the sheriff's office, not necessarily the individual. So they possibly could have gotten a book, but it's not going to hurt to get them another book. They can always give it to their under-sheriff or whatever. And again, we want to set things up. I'm waiting. Matter of fact, I have to talk with Jan about that, where we're at with that, if we can, if we're ready to be able to take on sheriffs. You know, we want to offer the sheriffs free access to the court access and the common law. Common law and court
access. I've been looking at the members of Mercer County. I'm wondering if there's any way. I don't think I have full, complete access like I used to have when I was officially West Virginia State Coordinator. I used to be able to have a special link or something that would give me extra purview to data. I don't know if I've been, I don't know if that has been revived, or maybe I'm just have a false memory. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm taking a look. Now, you said you're in Mercer County, and that is in West Virginia, right?
Right, West Virginia. I'm the state coordinator. I'm listed as the state coordinator, but I'm not sure that I have complete access to everything I could have as state coordinator on my website. My
okay, I'm taking a look here. I wonder why this page is coming up blank.
My dashboard.
Let me take another look here. This page, yeah. Let me go to Alabama and see what's on Alabama. Yeah. Jan or Terry, are you aware that this our page is down on giving out the information for committees of safety? Let me try another page here. Let's go back.
New York. I was able to go there today. I was able to go to the regular committee of safety.
How many counties were showing up on there? Do you recall roughly?
Let me go back there right now.
Yeah, none whatsoever. Hey, someone else check the website from their perspective. Maybe it's something on my side. I just clicked a button here just on something permitting for Facebook. Maybe I should have done unblock Facebook content. I don't know what that is. Anybody know that?
Are you going to start here or
what's that?
Start a committee of safety?
Well, you should be able to go to the directory.
That's where I went. I went to the directory.
If you click on the directory, you get your districts, okay? And you come down, you get your states, okay? And if you click on West Virginia, it should be given right here, should be all of the different counties that are starting committees of safety. And I'm showing
you. There it goes. I got the 10 districts. And then it shows...
Terry, Jan, Jan or Terry, have you guys checked this page out to see if it's working on your end?
Well,
I've got...
I see
John.
What you see.
Something's wrong.
I see what you see, John. But what should be there that's missing?
What's missing is the counties and all the committees of safety being built in West Virginia.
No, that's the first time I've seen that.
Let me go back and go to New York, because I know New York, we've got some counties going. And And there's nothing there either, you see? Nothing.
So far,
that's definitely an issue.
And this is all I've ever seen in West Virginia is two counties. I'm listed for Mercer, and then Chad James is listed in Wayne County.
All right, let me roll down here because we do have, you see, we do have that it's registering 161 committed to safety in process, in progress, okay? So that registry is coming up here, so it's calculating, but for some reason it's not appearing on the pages. And, you know, I do look at that from time to time. It's been a little while since I looked at that, so I don't know how long that's been down. I'm still trying to get a hold of the tech, and I left a message today again, and nothing. So I don't know what's going on with these people. All right, maybe you can send a message to Michael, Terry. Tell him that we have these pages down and need to do something about it, like right away.
Yeah, I'll work on that.
Okay, appreciate that. And I'll try to contact him again tomorrow. So, all right, well, anyway, what were you looking for, Anthony?
A way to communicate with all my members. I can download the jury pool. I've already done that. I want to be able to contact personally all of my members.
Okay. Well,
in West Virginia.
You mean all the members in West Virginia?
Yeah, and most of them are really old. So, I mean, I haven't seen anything recent. These members, most of them have been here either 9 years ago, 8 years ago, 6 years ago. I haven't seen any new sign-ups, recent sign-ups.
What's the problem with me? It doesn't look like I may not be logged in. Let me take this off here to log in.
Anthony, I can help you out with what you're after.
Okay. I go to Colorado and I see 5 listed.
Okay, you know what it is? I'm not logged in. I just got that friendly.
Well, link. That would help. Yes.
Yeah. So. And okay, now I'm logged in. That'll do it. Okay, let me go back to the directory now. I'll bring this back up now.
Okay. Okay, I'm here where I was before. I just clicked on people. So I have all the people here.
Okay, let me give you a rundown. We got two counties, I'm sure you could see that, Mercer and Wayne counties, that's in process. Okay, so you're in Mercer County, right? And if you look at the top, there's 88 members in that state, in the state of West Virginia. And if you hold the Ed, I guess Ed will be able to get you a copy of all of the members. And what we do is we give names, first name, their county, obviously it'd be your state. So the first name, the county, and their phone number. We don't give emails because we don't want people email blasting these people. We're giving you that so you can make literal contact. You know, organization, in order to really build an organization, you got to be talking to people. It's got to be on the phone, you know, person to person. Sending emails is not good, and then people, you know, aren't even going to probably ignore it anyway. So.
I'm down to snail mail. You know, I think snail mail is safer, too.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm looking at here is I have names. It has the state, whether they're active or inactive, but I can't put is there more to this database, like would I be able to get to know what county these people are in so I can focus on calling one county at a time,
something
like that.
Yeah. Ed, are you able to get him that list, or does he have to go through Jan? You should talk with Ed, because Ed is really leading... the district coordinator.
Was that Ed that chimed in and said he could help me with that? Was that Ed?
Yeah, that was Ed.
Ed, I got you. I thought that was you.
You will get a list of the members in your state and the county in which they live.
Okay.
Yeah, and then you can make the phone call, start with your own county, then you can do... And when you have a meeting... you know, what you want to do is invite people from that are in counties next door to you to come too, because then you may get two or three sparked up at the same time, you know, when you have your first introduction to, you know, the committee of safety process.
Yeah, I need to start contacting these people, get things moving here.
Anyway, anything else, Anthony? And anybody else wants to get into the queue, queue's open. But anything else, Anthony?
No, I think that's enough for right now. And thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Make sure that
I have the complete availability that I'm supposed to have as a state coordinator. And I appreciate Ed just listing me as one of the district leaders for District 7. I'm going to get started with that too, and I'd like some information on that.
Is your state in District 7?
Pardon me?
You're in District 7, you said. Okay, yeah.
No, he said you don't have to live in the district. So.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
But right now, it doesn't. It's you know, if someone wants to be a state coordinator in the sense that they want to build their state out, and they're in a different district, and you may want to try to work out a swap with someone. But looking at this, if you look to the district that you would be in, you're in West Virginia. That would be District.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it looks like it's District 8. You got 1, 2, 3, 4 states there, and Texas is a big state, got a lot of counties. 1, 2, 3, 4, the other. But again, you can, of course, build your state. I'm intending on really trying to get more active in my state. I just got to find the time to be able to really help build more committees of safety in my state. You know, I'm really kind of stuck on my own at this point in time. When doing
that's the issue with everybody. That's where they've got us bound, because I know a lot of people who are just fed up with everything, but they don't have any time to do anything. One of the people on my list is working 3 jobs just so his wife doesn't have to go to work, and he doesn't have any time to do anything, hardly to sleep.
Yeah, that's tough. I hear you. Yeah.
That's how the system has us right now. We just got to overcome it somehow by doing a little bit here and a little bit there. One person can make a big difference if that person is active. And that's where I'm coming from. I'm saying with God, all things are possible. And if God has anointed us to do this, if he's anointed me to be active and to be working in here, I mean, this is something I've been working on all my life. I mean, 20 years ago, I started a program called Clarion Call for USA. And, you know, it seems like people just, they come and they go and then they're gone. But I'm still working at it. And that's why I hope being here active again after going to school and went to Liberty University, that's why I bowed out for a while. And just looking forward to coming back and working with some people who want to get things done.
Yeah, well, it is true that people are really strapped for money and doing whatever they can, and it does eat up a lot of their time just to make a living to be able to support their families and themselves. So that really is a big problem. But for most people, you know, we can find things. We can find some time. You know, and you were only looking for people to involve themselves in the community once a month, for one evening a month, so that's not too big a deal. And but you know, we're also expecting people to get involved with subcommittees, that maybe they'll have to spend a couple of hours a month just getting something accomplished for the committee. You know, everybody putting in a couple hours, you know, you can get a lot accomplished collectively speaking. You know, our nation is riding on this. The people have to step up in order to take back this nation and have government by consent.
Like
it requires us to talk.
Like you say, only the people can do it. I like to say only we, the honest, trustworthy Christian people, can restore our republic, because it took, if you think about it, and you know all of this, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but since we used to, we had state constitutions, and every state constitution required any state employee to be a born-again Christian, didn't matter what denomination. We had some real heavy liars coming in saying that they were born again in order to get us into this situation, even early on, when that mattered, you know.
Yeah, but that's and a little, so, and I don't think...
We need honest people. We need honest people, regardless, I think.
Well, we need statesmen, and but it's not right to require someone to be something in order to, you know, take a position in government. What's required of them is to take an oath and honor their oath, and we can say, be honest. But whatever we do, it doesn't matter. Evil is there, you know. You know, there's statistics on, you know, how many people out of so many people would be problematic and seize control, and seize the opportunity of the power and the authority they have to do things wrong, you know, to be a wrongdoer. You know, benefit themselves in opposed to trying to really step up to be a statesman and benefit the people. So that's going to happen no matter what. Government draws in that. But we have, that's why the people have to have an eye on these people. We have to have government by consent. We have to be involved. Mm-hmm. We can't get away from this. And if we don't do that, we can't have what we got. But let's go back to being a Christian, as a Christian nation. We definitely are a Christian nation. We're built upon the common law, which is built upon the Bible. And the founding fathers were sons of God, not all of them. There were some atheists among them, and they were welcomed. I'm sure there were other groups of people believing different things. You know, there are different denominations, I'm sure, and whatever else. But generally speaking, the majority of them were born again. And they talked as if they were. They acted as if they were. They spoke and wrote as if they were. So we have to assume that they were. And clearly, the symbols that Jefferson and Franklin wanted to put up as a nation. You know, we have the eagle, but Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin had two different ideas of Israel coming out of Egypt. And they refer to us as the new Israel that's spoken about in the Bible. And so, you know, and there is a, in Psalms, I believe it is, you'll find a verse that says, blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. And it was England that carried the cross from early on, maybe about 400, 500 BC, AD. All the way up until sometime after 1600, because in 1600 is when the king started to make a move to destroy the courts. That's when the Bar Association was founded in England. The king set that forward. And of course, that crept its way over across the pond here to the United States, where we were the colonies in those days, and that was in 1750. And the whole thing about the bar is they were moving to require people to be bar taught, to be bar, they call it a license, to be bar licensed, and in order to control the operations of the court, to bring it into a civil law court, a court under Babylon and not under the, you know, God's law. And so it brings it under men instead of God. And that's been the battle all the way through, is that bar has been problem, and that the American Bar Association had eventually got, but they're still part of the British accredited registry. So they're still part of the same thing. And we heard recently that I think we played this. In fact, I'm sure we did play this. It was last week we played this, or the week before, a video that talked a little bit about this, where ultimately. The Queen, when she was alive and Trump was president, went over and served notice. We're done. We're disconnected, period. We're leaving the ink and moving over back to the USA. And same thing happened with Rome. I remember when that happened, I saw the Pope's face at the meeting. He looked really sad. Mm-hmm. really look disturbed. And I often wondered, what the heck did Trump tell this guy? And in any event, the Bar Association is the big problem. They're the destructors, and they destroyed our courts completely. They totally took our justice out of our courts. So that's the battle. Right?
That was last week. You ran that last week.
Yes. Yeah, I thought it was either last week or the week before.
Yeah, it was good.
Anything else, Anthony? Anybody else wants to get
in? No, that's it, and we'll keep in touch, and bless you, and I'd love to see this thing to conclusion. It's all in the Lord's time.
Well, absolutely.
But I'll be working at it.
Anthony, one question. Did you receive the emails from me?
No, I did not. Did you ever get one from me? I sent you another one.
I thought I did, but I've had to check. But I sent mine on the 11th. I had the attachments.
On the 11th. I'm looking. I could have missed it.
Could be.
And it's Ed. It's Ed from...
National Liberty Alliance. No.
National Liberty Alliance. Let me... I'll search it.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, Anthony. All right.
You're welcome. And we'll talk again.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we got Michael, looks like from Michigan, I think. Let's see. Question. You got the mic. Go ahead, Michael.
Yes. Hi, John. As long as I've been listening to your information and everything, I was just listening to Bill Thornton. I put Bill Thornton on quite often and listen to him about when he enters the Roman civil Babylonian court. And basically his philosophy is that if they don't step on his foot by messing with anything about his natural rights, that he won't step on their feet. And saying all that, the paperwork, let's say that you provide the clerk before you enter into their domain, do they know that you are a court of record? I mean, is that in the paperwork? So
yeah, they don't know what a court of record is, though.
Right, but it's expressly on paper that you're entering through the court of record.
Right. If you're opening, you're coming in as a plaintiff and you're suing someone, it's right in the opening statement, you know. My name, one of the people in this court of record sues. Then it goes on from there. But also up on in the heading, you always have up on the top right-hand side where you have the name, number, you know, the court case number, and then you have a place for the judge or the magistrate, and also I always have up there jurisdiction, court of record. And in the footnote, the court of record proceeds according to the common law, and is probably a couple, at least one, but I think there's a couple of the Supreme Court rulings concerning that comes out of Black's Law. So yeah, a court of record is the key. They don't understand that, but eventually that argument comes up in the court. You know? They've been fully informed.
Yeah.
And I have about, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. I have about 6 or 7 pages of any paper I write when I go into federal court, at least. I put the law of the case in there. And it depends on the case, you know. I mean, if I'm going up against the status quo, suing a major corporation or going up against the government or a government agency or something like that, I have the law of the case in there. If I'm going to sue an individual, I may not put the law of the case in there. And it depends, you know. When I write my case, I have to make a call on it. But you can always put on a memorandum with the law of the case. But Bill Thornton, you know, we learned a lot from him. We got a few things that are different. It took me, you know, my research, I came up with some conflicts. One of the things, he comes in with the position that he's the king of the court. Well, he's not the king of the court. He may be a sovereign in the court, but he's not the king of the court. The king of the court ultimately is God, and it's the jury that's going to reflect the will of the king, which is God, and that's the key to any court. Now, if you going into a court and you're suing someone and you're permitting the judge, you know, to be a judge in the case without going to a jury, there are certain cases that you can do that with. And if you had honest judges that really honored their oath, it wouldn't be a problem in some of the smaller cases to not have to deal with a jury, and because you get things done very quickly. But in any event, any case I go in, I'm looking for a jury. But if it's something that could be dealt with very quickly by a magistrate, then you can get a summary judgment if the case is that obvious that it's not going to go anywhere for the other side. So, you know, you can still get your case run through quickly if it's a very simple case. I got a very simple case going into the courts, so we'll probably be filing it this week, and going up against the comptroller here in New York State. And it's an extremely simple case. It's probably about 4 or 5 pages. I did put the law of the case in it originally on the first draft, but the second draft I removed it because I realized this case is so simple, going to be so quick, I don't need the law of the case. And we're going to get a decision very quickly for a summary judgment, slam dunk, in my opinion. So it depends on the case and what you're doing and how you frame it and what you're looking to do and who you're battling on how you're going to go in after it. But again, Bill Thornton makes the position that he's the king of the court. He gets to decide, and that's not true. I thought, when I first learned about it, I was struggling a little bit with that idea, but I was leaning towards it because it has some merit to it. But remember, the other side, unless you're going up against the status quo, you know, if you're going up against an individual, well, they're a sovereign too. But, you know, it's the jury that makes the decision, and they decide innocent or guilt. They decide injury or no injury.
They're the tribunal.
Yeah, they decide everything. And and God said he wrote the law into our hearts. Okay, you know, there's a big difference pre-cross and after Christ. So, you know, you get into the Old Testament and you read the things going on and, I say, wow. It's a whole different thing on this side because of the Christian influence over time has gone out into the world. And, of course, it's very heavily here in the United States. And I do seem to see a revival, not necessarily revival in churches, but I'm starting to see that people are realizing they need the Lord and they're coming with a bent knee and they're accepting it. And, they're kind of returning to their roots and realizing they need to do that. Because this is the only way the nation's going to be saved. This is God's nation. Blessed is the nations whose God is the Lord. And so, you know, we acknowledge him and he'll heal the land. He promised that. That's his word. He said that in the Bible. We just have to believe it and honor him.
Mm-hmm. The point about common law of it expresses and it's solidified by other cases that have been ruled on previously, right? I mean, that's one of the proponents.
Absolutely.
Of common law.
There's a lot. There's a tremendous amount of evidence concerning and the process of common law. But I'll make it as simple as possible, and you can't make it any simpler than this. And if you really think about it, okay, it makes all the sense in the world. Remember, we're going into what's called courts of justice. That's the beginning. That's what we want. We want a court of justice. And we know that God said he wrote the laws into our hearts. Okay, so everybody knows a wrongdoing. We know when we injure somebody, we know we shouldn't have done it, you know. Ultimately, the main max, one of the main maxims is do no harm. It's that simple. You know, if you harm somebody, you've injured somebody, and you have to restore that person. You steal a man's ox, you got to give him back 4. You know, that kind of thing. These are all principles. And but the key thing is this, and this is what makes it really simple, and people have a hard time to get their head around it to a degree, but if they really puzzle through this, think about this, and test it out, I think they'll see the logic of it is, and that is common law is simply one thing. It's common sense. It doesn't go anywhere. It's just common sense. You know, you take, what is common law? You know, a man is innocent until proven guilty. I mean, that's a principle that even the civil law seems to raise up. They don't honor it, but they make that claim anyway.
But proven by whom? That's the problem they have.
Right. But it's not just that. You know, they still look at you as being guilty or to some degree, you know, especially the judges. But that's just another thing. The point is that that's a maxim. That's something that cannot be denied. For every injury, there must be a remedy. I mean, that's just common sense. It's a maxim. It can't be denied. That's justice. So common law is simply common sense. It's working off of the heart and applying the common sense. It's that simple. And it comes with mercy. Mercy is always considered at the end of the day. You know, if it's a criminal thing and death penalty may be in view, and you know, maybe the people feel mercy. They have to consider that at the end. At the end of the day, that's the last thing they have to consider is whether they're going to be merciful to the individual. And particularly in a criminal case, maybe they're going to put them in jail for life, potentially speaking, or the death penalty, or whatever it is, which may be the maxim. But it's up to the jury to decide, you know, what it may be, whatever.
Do you think it, due to past cases and past precedents in court, do you think that that is a factor that might be helping to wake up some people that operate within the Roman and Babylonian court?
Repeat the question again. I'm not sure I understood it. Say it again.
Well, the past cases that ruled in, you know, in the court, in the Roman civil court.
Every single case in America from 1938 on is questionable. Even cases where people belong in jail, it's questionable. They've really destroyed this whole process. They've really injured our system. And everybody does have a right, if they wanted to question the decision of the court that found them guilty once we get to the other side of justice. It's going to be a major problem. Lots of people in jail that shouldn't be in there, they need to be released. You know, so a lot of corrections need to be made, and it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a big problem, in my opinion.
I guess my point was, John, that if you find yourself in their court and a past ruling is brought up in the court, and
when you say a past ruling, I mean, what do you mean by that?
Well,
on something or
yeah, ruling, when the court ruled in a particular way.
Well, yeah, look, we're going into courts of civil law courts. Anytime you're in a civil law court, they can't fine or incarcerate, yet they do. Okay? And they can under certain situations, you know, because the commercial activities, you could be fined. Incarceration, that becomes criminal, it's got to go into a court of law. They can apply the statutes upon an individual that they agreed upon. That's so they use the kind of what we look at as a nisi prisi part of the process, you know, unless first. But, there is a major problem with people who have been convicted in courts of injustice. All the courts are unjust. Every jury seems to be stacked. They apply statutes on the people, put them in jail. Every case, almost every case that the feds have gone up against the people are really all unjust cases. You know, the IRS, people in jail from the IRS, from being pursued by them and going to the quote-unquote tax courts. I mean, all those people immediately had to be released. I mean, if we're going to be just about the whole thing. Yeah, anything where the feds came out, for instance, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, the ATF, okay, all those cases, most of those cases anyway, not all, but most of them, are unjust. I mean, they've gone against people because they have a firearm, maybe crossed the state line or went into Washington, D.C. with it or whatever the case may be, or try to make a claim, some other claim about it with a weapon. Again, you know, all unjust. So,
are we making any progress in the Roman civil courts and the recognition of common law?
Yeah, it's still an uphill battle. They're still playing games. There's more drama, you know, we'll probably put something out, the next step we're going to do here, let people get some inside information. People are taking the course as far as the process that we're going to try next. It's a constant resistance. They're totally lawless, totally lawless. We put in a writ of error. It was a very powerful writ of error. It laid out so clearly. And what does this guy do? He still acts like a judge instead of a magistrate to begin with. And he just puts out a simple sentence in an order. Dismissed or something like that. I forget the actual words, but he just ignored the paper and moves on. So we have to move to the next step on that case. Which, again, we have a couple of steps still to plan. And if necessary, we'll have to go through the appeal. And I'm trying to stay away from the appeal, but the appeal could be a friend of ours, too, because an appeal has the opportunity to get up to the Supreme Court, which is very difficult to do, though, to get up to the Supreme Court. You know, all the cases out there, they only hear so many. But this, I think, is if they really were true to justice and what they claim to be and their oaths and so on and so forth, I don't know that there should be a case out there more important than the one that we're running through right now, which is 18 points that takes us away from courts of justice and brings us into courts unknown, jurisdictions unknown, courts of injustice, courts of men and not God. What more case could be more important than that? To bring us back to courts of justice. You know?
So obviously the current civil court systems are in complete denial of the Constitution, because the Constitution clearly states that we are a common law country.
Absolutely. The federal judges, in my opinion, everyone that I've had contact with, in my opinion, are evil people. That's my opinion. And because they outright ignore the Constitution, they ignore justice, they don't care about justice, and they know the truth. That's the big thing. They know it. And even when you point out the law clearly, look at how much clearer can you get when you go into rules and look at what Congress had written in. So someone put something good in there, and it ended up to be in the very, very beginning of the rules. That any of these rules that is repugnant, I'm putting it in my own words, that's repugnant to the law, that changes any right, okay, is null and void, ultimately. And Rule 2, what is Rule 2? It gets rid of justice. Rule 2 took justice out of the court. It took law and equity, combined it, called it civil law, put us all under the mind, you know, under the minds of men and not of God. That's what they did. And there is a 19th paper I want to write and add to the paper. I know I had written about this in one of the papers we had written. I'm going to make a memorandum out of it, and it's on the comity between judges, COMITY, comity. And which really, what they have done is they have taken trial court cases and made decisions on certain things and made that the law. They call that common law. And that is not common law. I mean, that's just... so all this evil stuff that these judges make in one court to another court. These minions of the New World Order, the bar attorneys, come in and they'll use that to leverage their case to get a conclusion. Well, they decided this way in that case here, and should decide the same way, and judges rule that way. I mean, so they're a law unto themselves, is what it is.
Well, I think it should be pretty clear that it should be very clear that the people that they see that the destruction of checks and balances by the bar and how they're leading the government.
I didn't understand that. Say that again.
Well, how they're destroying the checks and balances, and it should be clear to people that the bar association or the lawyers, the bar is leading the government.
Well, absolutely, and look, it all started in 1600. That's when it all started. Destruction of the courts. You know, England was the country. England was the nation that lifted up the cross and carried the cross, and they were blessed for that. Unfortunately, they made the mistake by getting a king. That was the big problem. And you know, we learned from that. When Jefferson and Madison and others got together to create this great nation, they learned from that. We don't want a king. We already got a king. You know, we don't need another one. And so that's how this nation was created, without a king. And so the cross was transferred ultimately. The carrying of the cross to the nations to bring the light of the gospel out into the world, that was carried over to the United States now as we became a nation. So, and again, I go back to, you know, in Psalms, that verse, blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. And think about that. The Declaration of Independence talks about the blessings. You go into... the Constitution itself, one of the six requirements for those people that are in power and authority, okay, is to secure the blessings of liberty. It's part of the preamble. It's 6 points. One of the 6 points is to secure the blessings of liberty. So liberty is a blessing. And as long as we come with a bent knee, generally speaking, as a nation.
And again,
it's the people who really are active. And those who are not necessarily Christian, or maybe they're atheists or whatever, but they recognize that, you know, the morals and the justness and the importance of the system being set this way, because it gives justice, it gives liberty, it gives freedom, and they accept that. So there's, again, many people who were not necessarily Christian early on. We were a Christian nation, generally speaking, anyway, but there were still people who were not, and they were accepted. Just like the Jews did, they accepted people that were not Jews. When the Jews were wandering for 40 years, heading towards really nowhere for 40 years until they went into the, you know, into the land that was promised. But, you know, a lot of people tapped in on them, and because of the way that they were organized and structured, they found justice there and the safety.
One last thing. I think the I think one of the most well, of course, the two most powerful things that we have in our quiver to simplify the process, and what should be the difference between the people who ordain and establish the boundaries for these public servants is that. Their oaths and their bonds. I think that's a simple recognition. I think that most people could wrap their heads around once they understood that if they had bad behavior, the bond can be removed and they can be removed.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the next moves we're going to be making here with this case. There is an enforcement code for bonds and oaths that they have to respond to. And we did call for that in this case here, and, you know, that is up going up in the federal district courts here. So, and this is on the IRS case. It's not on the other case. But, you know, we'll probably make the same move on the other, in the major case that we're talking about as far as the 18 memorandums makes 18 points to bring us back to a court of justice. And again, I want to add a 19th. But in any event, we'll be filing a paper. We already demanded their oath and bonds. We've done that already. And they failed to respond to that too, you know.
Okay.
No, he sent the paper back and says, he says, I forget the word he used, dismissed or something, I don't remember. But in any event, they ignored that. So now we're going to file an enforcement to the code that enforces it, and we'll see where that goes. You see, we're building, really, the battle that we're building here in this case, I always knew we'd never win on this level. And I always knew we're probably going to, unless we get a judge that really gets nervous and decides to do the right thing somehow, but that's hard for them to do because they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. But in any event, it goes up the line to the appeals, the appellate court, which is not necessarily a choice that we want to make, but we may have to do it. But we're building the case that's so solid, in my opinion, it's going to be difficult for the appellate court to dismiss it. And it becomes a prime case because of the principles of this case. It becomes a prime case to be looked at by the United States Supreme Court. The question is, do they have the guts at this point in time to look at that case? That's the question. We do know that they're at a point where they're making certain decisions that are good and correct, and powerful ones that they've made over the past year or so. And, you know, are they ready to accept the case like that we have put together? That's the question.
Are the Supremes just people wearing black robes?
Well, we do have some good people up there, you know?
Thank God we have a couple justices there.
Yeah, we have five of them. So, and they have made great decisions. I mean, look at Roe versus Wade. They overturned that.
We would say some good decisions here.
As a matter of fact, that individual who was talking earlier, hopefully they're still here. That's right. The United States Supreme Court made a ruling just this year, not long ago, get that ruling concerning the Second Amendment, the right of the people to carry a weapon. That's an unalienable right, and it's a recent ruling. So that's something definitely want to bring into that court. And that's mm-hmm. where the argument's got to go. I forgot about that.
We need to get to the point where all natural rights are honored.
What was that? We need to get to the point
where the realization that all natural rights are to be honored.
Absolutely. You know, they just have to stop applying the civil law. And again, this is all about money. They're filling their pockets up. And it's all about money. But they are trapped. They've sold their soul to the devil because they got trapped one way or another. They're stuck between a rock and a hard place. And the ones that haven't, I'm sure they're threatened. You better rule this. They already know. You don't become a judge unless the bar approves you. You don't even have the ability to come into a court. In other words, a civil law court, unless the bar, and all our courts are civil law now. So unless the bar approves you. So that tells you everything. Who has the most power? Who controls this whole thing?
Yeah. There goes checks and balances right out the window.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, John, it's been a pleasure talking.
Yeah, I appreciate the call.
Somebody had to fill in here. I'm sitting here listening, and nobody's on the line.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I should probably. Well, I don't know. I don't even remember ever getting to a point where we had nobody in the queue. And again, a lot of times we get to the point where we have too many and we have to leave people at the end without talking to everybody. But in any event,
this gentleman was on just prior talking to you. He said something. I just had to chuckle because I worked, within the organizations where you try to grow a group of people. And he said, I don't know if I got it verbatim here, but he said, people come, people go, and they're gone. That was so true.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, say hello to Gerard for me and the rest of the gang.
Yeah, he's here. So.
Good talking to you.
Thank you. All right. Well, that was good night. That was the last caller. If we don't get anybody else in the queue in the next minute or two, I think we'll end it for the evening. I'll get out early. We've got about 8 minutes left.
All right, God. God bless.
You too. So if anybody's got anything, get into the queue and take it from there. I don't know. I don't want to get into a subject matter that's going to take us some time. So I guess we got an end. Gerard, you got anything to say here before we close down, or anybody else? And Eric, I don't know whether we want to speak about what we were talking about in the open here. I don't know if that individual that sent that information, if they're in the room tonight, if we could talk a little bit about it.
I thought of it earlier, and I was thinking, I don't see him here tonight, so I don't know how to explain it. And but it is exciting. The potential of it's very exciting, but I think we should get a better handle on it because I don't know how to present it.
Here's the problem. Well, there's a couple of problems with it, but he came up with interesting things. He came up with an idea. And we need people who come up with ideas, but we need to be able to talk about ideas and make sure that we can work them into, you know, the plan. And if you don't have enough information, you know, and of course we all do this, you know, you go a certain direction and you make some decisions and you're heading down that road. And as time comes in, you get more information. You say, oh man, I'm on the wrong road. I better change and look for the next turnoff, that kind of thing. And so we need to talk about his idea, because the idea is good, but there are other problems with it, and I'd like to talk about it, and maybe he can come up with a different solution and different ideas. My thinking, again, is this: critical mass will bring us to the point to fund a professional movement here, because there are statistics, and statistics show certain things. If we can get membership between 750,000 to 1 million people, it's more than enough to fund the program. Statistics shows that. And there are people out there with, you know, big memberships. You go to the, you know, people listen to other people and they give them money. To look at Joe Rogan. I mean, he's one of the biggest guys out there, and he's got many millions of people hit up with him. And he's making a living out of it, you know. A good living, believe me. You know, NLA can operate professionally if we had 750 to 1 million. Because most of those people are not going to give, though. But the statistics show that we'll be able to grow that money.
Well, you know, he mentioned the stats, and I think the streamlining of the information is what could lead to critical mass, you know?
Yeah, but the thing is that opens up a process that we are pulling money in, okay, and we're giving too much away for free. Look at what we're giving $150,000 education for $125. Who can ask for more than that?
Literally. Yeah, no, but I don't know. Maybe I heard something wrong, or maybe you didn't hear it.
That's why I think we need to talk. Go ahead.
Yeah, he's talking about charging for it, but not even much. And he's saying his suggestion of how you should spend it, turn a certain percentage back to the program itself and to NLA. But
that brings us back to the same problem, critical mass.
Yeah, but if it's streamlined in this way, it will catch on, I think, because people will understand. My excitement.
You'll only get 1.5% of the people that'll stick their hands into their pockets and do something.
Yeah, I understand.
If you take, let me just run a calculation here. If you take, let's take 750,000 people, okay, and you multiply that by 0.015. Okay, that's 11,250 people, and if they give $5 a piece, okay, that's $56,000. But I think we'd average more than $5. That's why I say between 750,000 to 1,000,000 people, 750,000 to 1,000,000 people in a membership in order to get self-supporting. That requires critical mass. Critical mass requires getting the message out to the people that want to do something and realize there's a problem and they're already active. A lot of those.
And I don't know, again, this is not my bailiwick, but if I heard him correctly, then what we would have is kind of like a LexisNexis, but for common law.
I want to correct myself. I just realized something. That was only 1 month, 56,000. We don't even need that many people. We have 500,000 people. 1, 2, 3. How many zeros get to?
Let's go for the 750, though. I like that.
Let's just take 500,000 people, 500,000. You multiply that by 0.015, that's 1.5%. That brings us to 7,500 people. 7,500 people giving us $5 a month is $37,500 a month. Times 12, okay, brings us to 450,000. So, yeah, but remember, $5 is what we ask as a minimum. I would think the average across the board would probably be somewhere like $8 to $10. So we may be able to bring it to that. But
yeah, we just need to get with him and discuss it. But, you know, he mentioned that, you know, the just like you're talking about finding the next turnoff if we go the wrong way. Well, he's talking about computer programs and software and stuff. And so that's all a part of it. If you don't, you're certain that you're not going to use your first try, and you're going to have a beta, and then you're going to have versions after that. So that's no big deal.
Well, developing the software to do some of the things that he's thinking is going to take money.
Well, it's his, from what I heard him say, it's
the
his.
The other thing, a big part of that process is lawyers, though, the bar attorneys. Okay, we're looking to take that whole system out. Look, at if for America to survive with as a common law nation, the bar must be shut down. Remember,
Amen.
The bar is a British bar. It still is controlled from across the pond. It's not controlled here in America. Just because we have the ABA doesn't mean it's an American company. It's not.
Yeah, this, and you listen to these, you know, these alternative folk. They talk about the three-letter agencies and all that. I never hear any of them talking about bringing the bar. The bar must come down. It cannot be. It can no longer be. We must tear it to the ground.
Anti-Christian, it's anti-common law, which is, of course, anti-Christian. It's anti-justice. It's control is what it's about. It's giving allegiance to the powers that be, to the
Leviathan. Yeah, it's everywhere. It cannot stand. Every time the people have a problem, they go to one of the representatives. The representatives go to this door inside the building that they're in, and on the other side is a bar member attorney. And they come back and they tell them what the bar member attorney told them to say, no matter what situation you're in. And it's always, well, they don't say it this way, but it's always, your rights have been legislated away. You live in statutory prisons. Too bad. So sad. Bye-bye. So we got to get rid of it. They cannot stand. It cannot stand.
Okay. Ed, I see you got your hand up, I think. Pop right in if you want.
Yeah, there's a couple of outfits that I've been following a little bit. One of them is Stand Up Michigan. They've got 300,000, and they only just started a couple, less than 2 years ago. American Against Foreclosures got a couple of 100,000 people, and they're just starting. We got to get the right attraction.
Well, what John and I are talking about, I think we could easily present it to these people in these two organizations you're talking about, and they would eat it up. So anyway, John, you and I have to get with Mars and just start figuring this out.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. We have to just get the message out. We have a little bit different I've noticed a lot of sites you go to that have grown. They got a big membership, or at least they claim to have a big membership. But the site is very simple. It's not complex. It's not deep. And maybe that's one of the problems with National Liberty Alliance is we're very broad. We're very deep. and were about education, and people pull away from that, because it takes time, and it's a reconsideration of everything you're thinking, and so we're only going to get a small fraction of people that come to us that's actually going to hook in and do something, and probably smaller than most places. Because of the fact of, but what we're selling, if we can, if they stick around long enough to understand what we're selling liberty, you know, we're giving them a way to bring liberty to themselves and their posterity, and to have a just courts again, a just nation, and a free, you know, no longer slavery, because we've been enslaved all of our lives. People don't even realize it. We've been enslaved. So, you know, I don't know. It's going to take really just getting the message out to the right people. That's what I think. And I think we have something coming up that's going to do that. I really do. So we'll see. One way or another, we'll keep chugging along until we get to that critical mass, and that critical mass will set us free. The other thing, of course, is we are seeking money from different we're working on that. Looking for a big nut, and we figure maybe $1 million to get through 1 year. After that, we should easily be self-sufficient. So, all right, anyway, we're after 11 now. It's time for me to go. Nobody in the queue anymore anyway. All right, good night, everybody. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. Good night.